all the bundles of yours, they all...
So we are up to Shoftim Perek Tet Zayin, chapter 16.
That means you rule over us, happy with it.
In the last chapter, we had an episode where basically Shimshon was a wanted man. He was sought by the Plishtim, and he was hiding out. And the Bnei Yehuda felt threatened, and therefore they came to Shimshon. And he agreed to be handed over to the Plishtim. And shortly thereafter, he used his great strength to attack them, to kill them. And then there's a short episode where he became very thirsty, and Hashem provided water for him. And the Perek Tesvav concludes the last pasuk by Yishbot Es Yisrael b'nei Plishtim Esrim Shana, and he judged Israel in the days of the Plishtim for 20 years. So they were still somewhat under Plishti rule, but he was he at least alleviated some of the challenge during that time. Pasuk Aleph of Perek Tzayin, Vayelech Shimshon Azasa, and Shimshon went to Aza, Vayar Shom Isha Zona, Vayavo Eleha. And he saw an Isha Zona, and he came to her with her. He came to her. What's an Isha Zona? So typically we understand the word Zona to refer to a prostitute. The Malbim says he actually went to a Beis Zona, a prostitution house. And he points out that Shimshon, again, he was still wanted by the Plishtim. He wasn't afraid to come into the city and be around in public eye. He wasn't afraid of them. The Ralbag, really the Targum here, translates the word Zona as Pundikisa. And a pundiki is usually an inch. And so it could possibly be taken to mean that it was an innkeeper. He came to stay at her inn. That's what the Ralbag seems to say it. The Ralbag
explains by above.
So the Ralbag just says, and he came to her house to sleep there. Now, the truth is that at the beginning of Sefer Yoshua, we meet another woman who is referred to as an Isha Zona, and that is the famous Rachav HaZona. The second chapter of Yoshua, first Pasuk talks about how Yoshua sent two Meraglim, two spies ahead, Pinchas and Kalev, if I recall correctly. And it says in that pasuk, in the first pasuk of chapter 2 of Yoshua, Vayelchu Vayavo Beis Isha Zona. And they went and they came to the house of an Isha Zona, Ushma Rachav. And her name was Rachav, Vayishkivu Shama. And they stayed there. Yes, it doesn't say Vayavo Eleha, and they came to her, and he came to her. Here it says Vayishkivu Shama, and they stayed there. Now here also, the Targum translates the word, and it seems contextually accurate, as Pundikisa. She was a innkeeper, seemingly. However, the Radak there quotes this. The Radak says over there in Yoshua, Zona Kimashma, as it's implied, as it's simply taken, that Rachav was a Zona. She was a prostitute. Then he says, Omo Charet Mazon, or maybe it just means that she was a she sold food. She was an innkeeper, basically. She provided meals. Kimoshit. Right. Exactly. Very good. That's right. The word zona would be related to the word mazon. Kimoshit Tirgim Yonasan. He says that's how Targum Yonasan The Targum here translated Pundakisa.
That would make more sense because there it says Yishkabu.
However, he says, however, the Radak continues and he says that the truth is that even Yonasan ben Uziel holds that she was really a Zona Mamish, an actual Zona, because that's how he says, that's how he translates it everywhere, the word Zona, Pundakisa. And there are places where it just very, very clearly means, you know, that a Zona, a prostitute, and there's no way to translate it as an innkeeper, and yet he still uses the word Pundakisa to translate it. So what he means by Pundakisa, says the Radak, is that it means that she makes herself available. That just as a innkeeper makes herself available, people can come, so too a Zona, a prostitute, makes herself available. And in fact, even when Targum Yonasan translates it as Pundakisa, it still means a Zona, a prostitute.
During France in the Middle Ages, it's common, as you stated in any.
It came with that.
It came with
the package.
It was part of the package.
Like internet. Like Wi-Fi.
Free Wi-Fi. Yeah. So he saw an Isha Zona, Vayavo Elea, and he came to her and he spent time with her. Says Pasuk Beis Va'azosim Lamer. It was told to the man of Aza, which is the city where he was in. Ba Shimshon Hena. Shimshon has come here. Vayasogu. And they went around the city looking for him. They didn't know where he was. They just knew they heard that he had come to the city. And they couldn't find him, so they waited by the gate in ambush, waiting for him to come out. And they were quiet the whole night, saying, "Ad or habokir baharagnuhu, will wait till morning, till he gets up and he leaves the city, and we'll ambush him, and we will kill him." Now, how did word get out that Shimshon had come to the city? So, Rashi just says, I guess, you know, it was told over to them. Someone recognized him at some point, it would seem, but they didn't know where he ended up. But the Malbim says that he himself spread the rumor. He let it be known that he's come to the city. They didn't know who he was, that he was the one. Meaning he came to the city, he told people, you know, "I heard Shimshon's here." And word got out that Shimshon was in town, but they didn't know what he looked like, and they didn't know that it was the one spreading the rumor was in fact Shimshon, and they looked all over trying to identify, you know, who was the Shimshon, where was he? We did not have a name tag. You know, I suppose he wanted to show his strength, to show himself off, or goad them, he let word get out that he was in town, and they went scrambling to find him and were unsuccessful. Pasuk Gimel, Vayishkav Shimshon at Chatzi HaLayla, and Shimshon slept until halfway through the night. Vayakam b'chatzi halayla, and he got up halfway through the night. Vayechos b'dalso shar ha'ir, and he grabbed onto the doors of the gates of the city. Uvishtei amezuzos, and onto the two doorposts. Vayisayim im habriach, and he lifted them up with the briach, with the pole, with the lock. Still, the gates were still barred, the crossbar, thank you, that's a much better word. So they were still, the gates were barred. He didn't unlock them, he didn't break the lock, he just picked up the whole thing. Vayasem al kseifav, and he placed them on his shoulders. Vayalem al rosh ahar, and he carried them up to the top of the mountain, asher al pnei Chevron, that looked over Chevron. He carried the gates up. Doesn't say what he did with them. I can imagine him like throwing them off the mountain.
So of course,
he ripped them out of whatever they were attached to.
Must have been his exclamation.
He ripped them out.
So.
By the way, if you're wondering why he got up in the middle of the night, everyone in those days got up in the middle of the night. People would go to sleep at sundown. They'd have something called first sleep, and they'd eat, fool around, and they'd go back to second sleep.
That's why
the text talks about it so matter of factly. Because everyone got up in the middle of that.
Well, I guess they're right. They weren't expecting him to leave them, so like you said, he'd go back to sleep normally, and he left at that time. The Gemara has an interesting comment here about this little story. The Gemara says, and as usual, I'm having trouble finding it. There's a series of Gemaras in no particular order about Shimshon in Sota. So, the Gemara says, quotes the pasuk that he lifted up the doors, so we say on mezuzos and the doorposts, and he carried them. And then the Gemara says something very fascinating. Oh, really, an introduction to this. The Gemara says, Tanya Amr Rabbi Shimon HaChassid, Rabbi Shimon HaChassid said, Pink Seifav Shal Shimshon Shishim Amahaya. There were 60 amos between the shoulders of Shimshon. And then it goes on, quotes the pasuk, and the Gemara says, Ugmiri de'ein dalsos aza p'chusos mishishim ama. We have a tradition, we know, passed down that the doors of Aza are not less than 60 amo. And so says the Gemara, we see from here that Shimshon's shoulders, they had 60 amos from shoulder to shoulder. Okay, interesting comment. So then Yoyada says it's not to be taken literally. But then Yoyada says that what it meant is that he says it can't be kipshuto, it can't be that he actually had 60 amma, you know, wide shoulders.
Otherwise everybody would have noticed him when
he came in. Yes, certainly would have known he was there. He says, he would have had to be taller than 100 amos. And how could he have lived with people? Certainly the houses and the rooms were not large enough to provide shelter for such a person. Says Ben Yoyada, the point what the Gemara is trying to tell you is trying to highlight the tremendous strength of Shimshon, that he was able to carry on his not as broad shoulders a gateway that was 60 amos long. He says that is a big chiddush, that's very novel, that takes a tremendous amount of strength, because more than just the weight, just the balancing of something so long at that weight is a tremendous feat in itself.
Are we assuming he had Ruach Hashem then?
Yes. Yeah, we're talking about his Hashem provided superhuman strength. But he just says, you know, just to balance something so long without being able to hold it from the outside takes a tremendous amount of strength and coordination, and that's really what the Gemara means. And he throws in at the end, so you'll ask me, saying, why did Reb Shimon HaChassid make it sound like, why did he say it that way, that his shoulders were 60 amos, if what he really meant was he was able to to carry 60 amos. So Tzadagi says, it's known that Agata Gemaras, that's how they speak. They use Derechida, they use expressions, and he says, with the Sod HaMaimer, Yavo Lashon Zem Adukta Keter. In the depth of the statement, this is a very correct statement. What exactly he means by that, I'm not sure. But the idea is that there, I suppose that there's, you know, that in the presentation, there's also other Ramazim, other hints and other meanings that are to be interpreted, taking out of any Agata, and that's why they chose to say it that way. But what he says, it can't be Kipshuto, it can't be simple, like the simple understanding thing, one of the actually had 60 amma wide shoulders, that would not really make sense in terms of what we see of the life that he lived. And that's really those three sukkim are an episode in themselves, and then after that the Navi moves on to another scene. What the point of this episode is, I can only speculate. A, we see Shimshon perhaps falling to his taiva some more, to his desires, which, you know, is important in understanding and seeing Shimshon. And we also once again see repeated his amazing strength and the threat that he posed to Plishtim and the fear that they would have had for him after such a feat.
So it shows he wasn't afraid of them.
And that he wasn't afraid. Vayehi achar eichein, pasuk dalet, and it was after this. Vayehav isha benachal sorek, and he loved a woman in Nachal Sorek, Ushma Delilah, and her name was Delilah. Here we're introduced to the famous Delilah for the first time. Delilah, the wife of Shimshon. So, he doesn't say that he married her, but seems understood that he did. Malbim says, Avera Guerreras Avera, right? That's why he achar eichein, and it was after this. Avera Guerreras Avera, one Avera leads to the other. He was with the Isha Zona, and now he finds a Plishti woman to marry. Whether she converted or not, we've sort of touched on before. Many Rishonim assume that she did, that all the wives of Shimshon did. The Ravak says that here. He says that Chazal say it. I think it might be a Yerushalmi that he's referring to. The Malbim says he didn't. The Malbim says that the first wife, back in Timnah, Shimshon converted her, but this one he did not convert. And that's why here the Gemara, the Navi stresses her name, Ushma Delilah. Her name was Delilah, to point out that she didn't have a new name, as opposed to the woman in Timnah, that we were never told her name. It didn't stress her name. She says the Malbim would have converted, and she converted, and she got a new name, and her name wasn't important. But Delilah, the Navi's pointing out that she kept her, that her name was Delilah, and it remained that, and that's a way of hinting that she did not convert, and that she kept her name Delilah. He says the Yerushalmi says this, that the in Timnas was Derech Nisuin. In Timnas, the woman in Timnas, he married her. She was Megayer, and not the woman of Aza, and I suggest not the woman of Nachal Sorek, not Delilah either.
Implying that he is superior.
Right. Yeah. Vayalu eleha sarnei plishtim. And the officers of the plishtim went up to her. Vayomru la. And they said to her, Patioso, seduce him. Uri'i bameh koko gado, and see, where does he get his great strength from? Uvamen nuchal lo, and how can we overcome him? Vasar nuhu anoso, and we can imprison him to torture him. Vanachnu nitan lo ish elef umea kasef, and we will each give you 1,100 silver. So you could get very rich quick if all you need to do is tell us what makes Shimshon tick. Now, we'll notice in the pasuk that they are demanding, you know, multiple things here. The way that Mr. David says it is, they say, patioso, seduce him to tell you what is where his strength comes from, and then Uriiba Mekoko, and then see it for yourself. Test it to see if what he tells you is in fact true, and the strategy that he gives you to sap his strength, you know, find out if that is really a way to sap his strength. And they also promised that they weren't going to actually kill him, which may have been important to her. She was married to him, or whatever the nature of the relationship was, but she had a relationship with him, and if they would have threatened to kill him, then she may not have been willing, but they just said, Basar Nuhu will imprison him, and that, for that she was agreeable. The Malbim here says that they wanted, they sought two pieces of information about him, and the Malbim kind of carries this through throughout the next bunch of psukim, that first of all, they wanted to know what is the cause of his strength. They understood it wasn't natural strength. There must be some sort of cause. And then they could hopefully outsmart him to remove the cause. Secondly, they said, but if really it is natural, so then, find out how to stop him. Where is his strength in particular? What is his kryptonite, almost? You know, because as a Malbim, some people have, they're very strong in their hands or in their legs, and, you know, he might be able to be stopped in a different way if his strength is more specific to one area, then we can go after him in another area. And that's what they were asking, those two things. Bamekocho gadol, where does he get his great strength, assuming that it's not natural, that there's some segula, there's some sort of spiritual cause, then find out what that is so we can remove it. And if that there's a different way to defeat him, if it is natural, find out how we can defeat him, and we will make you very rich. Batomer Delila el Shimshon, and Delila said to Shimshon, Hagidon Ali, please Shimshon, tell me, Bameh Kochach HaGadol, where does your great strength come from? Uvameh Teyoser Lanosecha, and how could you be captured to be tortured? I'm your loving wife, just please tell me so I know, I want to know everything there is to know about you.
Why would she include the second part?
I don't know. It's a good question.
If you want to get a secret out of somebody, that's probably not the best way to do it, to say, so tell me so I can torture you.
I think that the way Mrs. Sovet presents it is that she was saying that, you know, tell us how to, what can really imprison you? That, you know, if you really love me, you'll tell me, you know, everything about you, and
I understand, but it could have been
So the point of saying the part about in order to torture you is that she wants to know what can, you know, that even when you're being tortured, you won't be able to escape. What's really gonna capture you? What's really gonna hold you down? So
somebody goes into that voice.
I don't think so. I don't recall it being something.
To me, on the face of it, it seems like a very strange
thing to throw in.
I mean, you want to know what his strength was.
So Pasuk Zayin by Yomer Eloi Shimshon. And Shimshon said to her, Im yasruni b'shivo yisarim lachim asher lo choravu. If you imprison me, if you tie me up with 7 wet ropes that never really dried out, the chalisi, the hayisi, ka'achad ha'am, then I'll be weakened and I will be like any other man. Or they have not, I don't know if they were never dry, but they're not dry. It was just stressing the point that they have to be wet. That 7 wet ropes that are not dry, and I'll be weakened like any other person. So she says, great. The officers of the Plishtim brought up to her, Shiva Yisarim Lachim, 7 wet ropes that weren't dry. And she tied Shimshon up in them.
Does anybody discuss why he entered at that point?
Why he told her?
Yeah.
Because he, well, let's see what happened. So, the Ha'orev Yosef Lo Bacheder, and the ambush was waiting in the next room. So she told the Plishtim, you know, I'm doing it, now's the time, everybody wait, and I'm going to weaken him, and then I'll call you in. So the ambush waited in the next room, Ratomer Elam, and she said to Shimshon, Plishtim Alecha Shimshon, the Plishtim are here on you, Shimshon. Right, they were still waiting in the next room, but she wanted to challenge him to see if he would be able to break out, to see if this had worked or not. And he ripped the rope, he removed the rope, like a person removes a cotton wick or a linen wick, zaricho eish, when it smells fire, meaning as easily as a piece of linen would it be lit by a fire that was even close to it. So that easily he just ripped the rope. Devonoda koko, and what does that mean? And his and this wasn't even his strength wasn't even known in this. This was nothing, you know, for him to break through. So he tells her what to do. She does it, and it doesn't work. And she's not happy. Again, he didn't know that the Plishtim were waiting in the next room. Vatomer Delilah El Shimshon and Delilah. What? No, she didn't tell. No. Well, she told him, you know, without him knowing that it was true, meaning he didn't see them. She just was trying to test him. And, like, after he broke out, she was like, you know, she was saying, I was tricking you, but I see that you lied to me. Vatomer Delilah El Shimshon, and Delilah said to Shimshon, Hinehi Saltabi, you've mocked me. Vatidabere like his oven, and you told me why. Atoha Hidanoi, now please tell me, Bamete Aser, how can you be stuck? How can you be in prison? So Shimshon has another approach. Vayomere Leha, and he said to her, if you will tie me up in new ropes, that no work has been done with them, then I'll be weakened and I'll be like any other man. And Delilah took new ropes. These are stronger, I think, avosim than yisarim. Previously referred to yisarim as the ropes. These are avosim. They're even stronger. I think I saw someone say that they're 3 rope, woven ropes together. And they're new. And she ties them up in them. Plishtim Alecha Shimshon. And she said to him, the Plishtim are upon you, Shimshon. And again, the ambush was waiting in the next room. And he ripped them from his arms like thread. And Delilah said to Shimshon, Adhena Isaltabi. So now you are mocking me. But to Dabe like his oven, and you're speaking lies to me. Hagid Ali, tell me please, tell me Bamet, actually this time she didn't say please. I think both of the first times she said please, then yeah, Hagida Nali, she said the first time, and the second time she said Hagida Nali, tell me please. Now she's a little bit, frustrated, she doesn't say please this time. Hagida Li, tell me, Zanete Yasser, how can you be stopped, how can you be in prison? Hayomer Elon, he said to her, Ta'agi Esheva Maslopo Shoshi Im Hamasechet. Now he's getting a little bit closer to the heart of the matter. He says, if you weave seven locks of my hair with the maseches is some kind of weaving piece. I think it's basically you throw it through when you loom a warp. It's the piece that the string is attached to, which you send through. I don't know what it's called. The shuttle? Okay. Thank you. Yeah, I think like if you have a long loom, then you'll like throw it through shuttlecock. Okay, so I think that's what it's referring to. Something like that. It's something that he would be able to tie, to weave his hair to. And he says, weave seven locks of my hair to this piece, and that will do the trick.
This may be different. The weaving rod, maybe a loom rod. In other words, it had frames, right? So could be just a rod that comprised the frame.
Okay.
Right, which were very strong, had to withstand high tension.
Okay, that makes sense.
Why he keeps answering us?
Sort of get to that. I mean, he's,
all right, the first two times he was playing with us.
Right, well, the question is really like, or just answer her. I mean, if he's been weakened, and he, is submitting to her, then why doesn't he tell her the truth? And if he's just playing with her, then, what's the point? Why? What's he doing? Yeah, it's not so clear. It seems, eventually he's going to tell her. So he is being weakened.
He is a reckless dude.
Yeah. So what happened? Batiska Vayase, and she, she drilled it into the peg. I don't know if this refers to that she somehow attached him to the ground by his hair. I think that's what it sounds like. That she pushed a peg into the ground.
Maybe she put the loom in.
Could be. I'm not sure. She somehow attached him to the ground. Vatomer Elo Pushtim Alecha Shimshon. And again, she said, the Pushtim are upon you, Shimshon. Vayikat Mishinoso. And he woke up from his sleep. Vayisat Vayisad Ha Ereg Vesanoseches. And he lifted up the peg of the loom and the masakas and the piece that his hair was attached to. Yeah, so somehow maybe you're right. Maybe it was attached to the loom, which was attached to the ground. I'm not sure. But he removed it all. No problem. Now here we have a little bit of a, difference of what we've had up till now and what happened. First of all, there's no mention of the ambush waiting in the next room. And the she said to push them around you, but it doesn't say that the ambush was waiting in the other room, meaning she said that each time, it's not that they jumped out each time, he didn't know that they were there each time, they were hiding in the other room. She said push them around you, and if he would be weakened, she would call them in and be like, okay, he's beaten. No, but it said that the Orev waited in the next room. In Pasuk Yudbeis, right, the Orev Yoshe Bechader means the ambush waited in the next room. So here, it doesn't say that the ambush... Exactly. Says the Malbim, it doesn't say that the ambush waited in the next room, because after she was wrong the first two times, they gave up on her. And they said, you're wrong. This isn't working. You're useless. We're not going to...
Three strikes for her.
And we're not going to bother you with this anymore. You don't have what it takes, and we're not showing up for this one. We also have in this one, Vayikat Mishanasan, he woke from his sleep, which it didn't say in the first two rounds of it. So the Mishnah David says that that specifically for this one, he wasn't actually going to let her do it, because he knew that he was a Nazir, and a Nazir can't even comb his hair, because he might pull out a hair. So he wasn't going to let her touch his hair, even though he told her that this was the way to weaken her. The only way that she was successfully able to do it was she did it when he was sleeping, as opposed to the first two times that she was able to do it when he was awake.
Were they familiar with the concept of Nazir, or were there a lot of people running around with really long hair anyway?
I'm not sure. I imagine a lot of people were running around with long hair anyways, but I'm not sure. Now, others, I saw someone else, I think maybe it was the Radak, who said that, no, she was, for all of them, he wouldn't let her do it. All three times, she did it while he was asleep. It only actually mentions that he woke up over here.
A good sleeper.
But really, all three times, she was sleeping, and she woke him up with the cries of the pushtim are coming, the pushtim are coming, and he, all three times, he sprung out of his, he awoke from his slumber and broke loose from his binding.
He is not a light
sleeper. Yeah. So now she's really upset. Vatomer Elov, and she said to him, Eich Tomar Hafich, how can you say that you love me? The Libcha in Iti, and your heart is not with me. You're just words. You don't mean it. You don't believe it. Now three times you've mocked me, and you haven't told me how you get your strength. And it was when she continued to speak to him and blast him with this every day with her words, and she pressured him, and his soul became short. He became to die. He no longer had any interest in living. He became depressed.
And he just wait.
You have to ask a relationship counselor about that, or an abuse counselor.
Find that thing, wife abuse, when the wife is abusing the husband.
Yeah. By Yaged Lois Kolibo, I mean, here was kind of mutual, it seems. They're both pretty. It doesn't sound like the best to them.
try to pair how they found each other. That's what happens when you hang around with Jonas.
Yeah. But Yagid left Kalibo and he told her his entire heart. No, it doesn't say that she was. But
that way it was the after the song.
Yeah, but a very rare of it here. So, now Yagid left Kalibo and he told her his entire heart. By Yomerla, and he said to her, Mora lo'ala roshi, a razor has never gone on my head. For I am a Nazir of Hashem from my mother's womb. In Gulachti, if I were to be shaved to have my hair cut, the Sarmi Man Mitochi, and then my strength would be removed, the Chaliti Vayisi Kachola Adam, and I would become weakened, and I would be like every man. And what we'll see in the next Sukkim is that was the ticket, and that she is going to be successful in cutting some hair, and he will lose his strength. Now here, we have a very slight difference in what he says is going to happen. He says, and I will be like all men, as opposed to earlier where he said, I will be like literally like one man, which I've been translating as I'll be like any other man. But there is a difference here that's clearly in the Pesukim, that there's Ke'achad Ha'adam up till now, and now he says Ke'chol Ha'adam, like every man. Mefarshim points out, the Mefarshim say that even when he was tricking her, he was doing it in such a way that it wouldn't be an out-and-out lie, and he was saying, you'll do that, and I'll be like, you know, a special person still. I'll be like Achad Ha'adam, I'll be like a one man, and I'll still be, you know, it could be interpreted, you know, in multiple ways, but it could mean that, you know, I'll still be as, you know, the one Shimshon still, I'll still be one unique person. In other words, it won't work, as opposed to now, where he changes his lashon, he changes his language, and he says, I'll be like every other man, and this is actually going to work.
Does anybody discuss how she got into this, or maybe I'm imagining it? I remember reading, learning somewhere that she did it by saying she wouldn't have relations with him.
Yeah, so that's what the Gemara talks about, which we're not going to get into now. Maybe we'll talk about it next time. For now, I want to just share with you a perspective on this whole episode, what it's coming to teach us, what are these four different episodes, you know, four things that he tells her on more of a machshava level, what's the Navi coming to teach us. So there's an Akedas Yitzchak in Parshas Naso. The Akedah was a Rishon, or sort of borderline contemporary of the Abarbanel, end of the time of the Rishonim. And there he's talking about Nazirus. And he gets into a discussion about how the Parsha of Nazirus hints to four different levels, sort of, straying from the right to the proper path. And he says the first level is losing a hagbalah, basically acting without any thought. A person just, you know, sort of what drinking, what wine will really do to a person is they'll lose their ability to distinguish
that
they'll give in to desires. They won't distinguish, he says, between permitted food and forbidding, between your own property and other people's property, or between your wife or someone else's. All these things, a person can, you know, it's impulsive. It's not deliberate, but a person can come to that, and he says that's the first step of Nazir. It says, Miyayin v'sheikhar yazir, a Nazir, he separates himself from wine and beer, that because that's the effect of wine, and another separates himself from that. Then there's a second level, he says, that a person's actions might look pretty much the same, but they're more deliberate and defined. That a person can develop for himself just mixed up hashkafos that don't make sense or are improper. Like many laws of different societies, and he says that particularly we see it by the Anshei Sodom, the people of Sodom, where they had all these different laws and rules that just were totally off base and against the Torah, and that's the second level. Then there's a third level, which is, and he says that's hinted to. Where it's in Nazir, where it says chometz yayin, the chometz shecher lo yishe. You can't drink even the vinegar of wine, because just as you have to separate from drunkenness from wine, he also has to be careful not to acquire the vinegar of that. Even if it's defined, but it's still a kilkul, it's terrible, it's bad, and it's the same problem as wine. It's sort of wine gone sour, and that's hinted to in the stay away from the vinegar of wine. Then he says there's a third level, which is where you start to read these opinions, these mixed up hashkafos, let's call them, into the Torah itself. And you start to learn that into the sugya, into the wisdom of Torah. And you come to mistakes and to kfira, and that's where it says that a nazir, he should even not eat nishras anavim lo yishta. He shouldn't eat something that was soaked in wine. Meaning if you take a piece of bread and you soak it in wine, even that a nazir can't eat. Because so there you have the wine sort of poisoning that which is permitted to him. You have the wine which represents these off-base opinions and hashkafos coming into the Torah, into that which is permitting and penetrating that and poisoning that. And then the last level is all outing out loss of emuna in Hashem, and this he says is hinted to in the pasuk anavim lachim v'yaveshim lo yochal, that he shouldn't eat wet grapes or dry grapes, even though the grapes aren't yet wine. But this represents the mind, that wet grapes are quickly going to turn into wine, dry grapes not as quickly, but these are the messed up, the wrong hashkafos that a person develops, lack of emuna, which quickly will penetrate and affect his actions. Those are four levels that he sets out. He says these four levels, first of all, they sort of one leads to the next. At first you're young and crazy, and at a young age, the first thing he gives into desires, whether he's drunk or not, but he acts that way. He's not careful about things. Then they become more a part of his hashkafos, that he decides that that's the right way. Then he, in fact, reads that into the Torah, that's what the Torah is saying, and then he just ends up denying, the Torah and Hashem's existence entirely. He says that that's what is being hinted to in these four steps of Shimshon. He says certainly it's not just a story here. There's something that is coming to teach us.
And Shimshon follows this.
No, he's saying that Shimshon is a remez. He's a hint. He's teaching us. He represents all people, and Delilah represents the bad, the evil, and the Yetzer Hara. So the first step was with the wet rope, the Yisrael Lachen. Bind me in wet rope. He says that the wetness. This is a common discussion in the medievals that lachos, that there's a it's in their version of science, I think, that there's, you know, an over, if you have an, too much liquid in the system or something like that can cause, he says, I guess, you know, that's immaturity and bad decisions, and that's the first step that it's into that the wet ropes were like the wet unexperienced young person whose decisions are gonna be off, sort of giving into desires without defining it, without deliberation. But that at the end of the day, Shimshon is able to overcome in his as long as he's still a Nazir, he has his Amuna, that he can overcome those that challenge. Then he asks for the new ropes, Avosim Chadashim. The new ropes are a remez, are hinting to the new ways, you know, which are improper, which the person, you know, decides for himself. He defines new ashkafos, you know, on his own, that this is the, like stone, that this is the way, and that's being hinted to in the new ropes. But again, as long as he holds on to his nazirus, he's able to overcome that. And then third, he sort of gives her an insight into getting at his hair. He tells her about the locks of his hair, that and this is hinting when he tells her, you know, just bind my hair in the shuttle of the, or in the side of the loom, whatever we decided it was. And here he's getting into his head. It's mixed up and it's woven together, and he's weaving in his improper hashkafos into his head, into his Torah approach. And
seems like though that he had in the beginning he had already been, what was he doing going to his own?
Yeah.
How that fits into this remez.
It's a remez.
He was already going rapidly downhill before.
Okay. And then, but again, you know, he wakes up from his sleep and in his slumber where these hashkafos are overcoming him, and he wakes up and he breaks out of it and he's still able to overcome until he strikes at his Nazir Elokim. Once he takes out the Nazirah, so that's, now he has no more Emunah, he has no more belief in Hashem, and that's when he is finally defeated. Now, it's not saying that this is exactly what happened to Shimshon, but this is what the lesson here is. The Navi is being merames to these ideas, to these four steps in a person's, descent and the protection that Nazirus can provide from these improper hashkafos.
Thank you very much.